So if you would open your Bibles, we're in chapter 17 of the book of Genesis, and we're going to start in verse 1 tonight in Genesis chapter 17, and again this is part 19 of our study of Genesis. If you remember last week, if you were here with us, one of the things that we looked at last week was we had Sarai and Hagar were both involved in sort of a scheme. Sarai was being impatient with the Lord. Of course, in chapter 12, we read at the beginning of the covenant that God made with Abram, and that was that he would be the father of a nation. And his seed, through his seed, the nations of the earth would be blessed. And of course, a great number of promises came along with that. 11 years had passed by, and of course, Abram's wife Sarai was becoming very impatient. And up to that point, Sarai had been barren and unable to bear children. And so she decided that the best way to go about having offspring was through her servant, Hagar. And she convinced Abram to lie with Hagar, and the result was, of course, that Hagar produced a child. We talked about all the result of that, the animosity, the hatred, the jealousy, all the human difficulties that come from and the emotions that spring up from extramarital, what really amounted to an extramarital relationship, even though it was condoned by Sarai, the fact that Abram took to himself a second wife, had sexual relations with Hagar. There was a child produced from Hagar when Sarai was unable to produce a child. Hagar then gloated because she was able to do that which Sarai was not able to. Abram obviously paid attention to Hagar as a wife and as an equal, which Hagar was a slave and certainly not one equal in status with Sarai. So she had no business doing that. There was just all kinds of sins, and then we looked back at the cause of all these sins, and really it started when God first approached Abram all the way back in the land of Ur, when he was still living with his father, and God said, "Get away from your father, get away from your family, take your wife and leave, and go to the land where I'm going to show you." And what happened was Daddy was the one who moved him out. And on the way to Canaan, they stopped at Haran and camped out there for the rest of Daddy's life. And so there was a great delay. And once they got to the land, there was a famine in the land, and they kept going into Egypt. Well, and so it was just sin after sin, and mishap after mishap, and misstep, complicating one thing after another that leads down the road to problems. And so problem after problem after problem, and you know and I know that once you get on the road to problems in your life, they're very hard to erase. They're very hard to, it's very difficult to get off the, if you're a train going down the track, once the train jumps the track and gets off the track, it is so difficult to get back on the track. To take the train and actually set it back on the track, it's much easier to keep the train on the track, to just slow down and actually keep the train on the track than it has ever place it back on the track once it gets off. And so it is with a life. Once it gets off the track of where it's supposed to be going, it's so difficult to get back on track where all the perfunctory problems and all the distractions and all the ramifications of the things that have been done in the past and everything that's mistakes that have been made don't interfere somehow and come back to bite you and nip you in the heel and it's so difficult. I mean, people pack up and leave and move to another part of the country thinking, I just need a fresh start. And they still have problems because things come back to, haunt them. They got these ghosts in the closet, as the old saying goes. And oftentimes, most times, almost all times, these things are always brought on by them, by their own problems. Well, the result of this problem that was caused by Abraham, of course, was a human life, as so often happens these days. The problem was a child. And his name, of course, being Ishmael. Well, as we begin chapter 17 in the book of Genesis, Ishmael's still around. And he's growing up. And since we last saw, in chapter 16, 13 years have passed since Ishmael was born. And as far as we know, God has not spoken to Abram and Sarai for 13 years. In my Bible, chapter 16 ends right there. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. And then it says chapter 17. And when Abram was 90 years old and 9, the Lord appeared to Abram just as if it was the next day. But when you think about it, 13 years went by. 13 long years. And as far as we know, God never said I, yes, or boo to Abram in those 13 years. And when we go down through this chapter, you find out they're living in a tent. I mean, they're not living in a mansion somewhere or, like the Beverly Hillbillies once they moved to California. They're living in a tent for 13 long years, raising a baby, and then he becomes a small child, and then he grows up, and now he's becoming a teenager. He's 13 years old. Meanwhile, this promise that happened, a number of chapters ago, Lord said to Abram, I will make of thee a great nation and bless thee and make thee thy name great and thou shalt be a blessing. Where is that happening at? We're still living in a tent in the middle of a dusty land with one small child that was born to an Egyptian slave. Doesn't seem to me like God's making you very great, Abram. I'm sure that was what Sarah was thinking, frankly. So here's Abram, and he's 99 years old and has a teenage boy. So Genesis 17:1. Abram was 99 years old, and the Lord appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be thou perfect. Walk before me and be thou perfect. Think about what God is telling Abram here. Walk before me and be thou perfect. Now, we've talked about being perfect in church on Sunday. about attaining to, as Paul talks about, attaining to the same life that Christ led. You know, because Christ was perfect. And Paul talks about being perfect, walking as Christ walked, living as Christ lived, thinking as Christ thought, being as Christ was. And here, God never said anything about being perfect to Abram before this. He never said, Abram, you need to, be righteous. He said, never said you need to clean up your act. You never need to, didn't say you need to quit talking like that. You know, be a better man. Work on your character. Work on your leadership skills, your fathering abilities. You need to be a better husband. You know, maybe a better neighbor. Any of those things. Suddenly, when he's 99 years old, and when was it when he first appeared to Abram? When he was 75 years old. That's when Terah died, was 75 years old. We don't know exactly when he first appeared to Abram. When his father Terah died, he was 75 years old. So it's been 24 years since Abram's father died. We don't know how long before that God appeared to Abram and they, got out of Ur and went to Haran. But from the time that Abram's father died and Abram finally got a move on into the land of Canaan and then kept going into Egypt, he was 75 years old when that happened. So it's now been 24 years. And this is the first time God says, you know what, Abram? You need to start cleaning up your act. Be perfect. Walk before me and be thou perfect. Be the person that you should be as someone who gets to talk to God. You think about that. For at least 24 years, and we're probably talking about closer to 40 years, realistically, since God first appeared to Abram and said, Abram, this is what I'm going to do with you. God did not expect Abram, or realistically, God didn't do anything of substance with Abram. Abram basically screwed up left and screwed up right every time you turned around. And here we are, 30, 35, 40 years later, and what's Abram looking at? What's Abram staring at right in front of him? A 13-year-old boy that is the consequence of his screw-up. From the very first time God showed up. It's a reminder of how he messed up. From the very first time God came to him and said, get you away from your father and from your relatives and move out and get to the land that I'm going to show you. And Abram says, well, that sounds like a good idea, but I think I'll just stay here. Mature Christians don't happen overnight, do they, Mike? And we think about Abram, and now, of course, most people call him Abraham. We think about Abraham as the father of the Jewish nation. And we think about Abraham as our father in the faith, as Paul says. And Paul says, if you be in Christ, then Abraham, then you're of the seed of Abraham. And you think, wow. What a great man Abraham must have been. And you turn to Hebrews chapter 11, and you read about all these people of faith. And who does it start out with? Abraham. Wow. What a man of faith he must have been.
Wow, he must have been born with faith exploding out of him. But the fact of the matter is, it took 30, 35, 40 years maybe before he was even starting to grow up to be the man that God could actually do something with. And then God, at that point, expands the terms of the covenant. You read in chapter 17, verse 2 here, he says, I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. Now, you're not going to see a lot of new information here, but Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him. Now, what's new about that? Is there anything different about that? Before now, God always appeared to him and said to Abraham, you know, this is what it's going to be. This is what it's going to be. This is what it's going to be. After, you know, here's chapter 15. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. The Lord had said to Abram in chapter 12, get thee out of thy country. But here, we have something a little different. Here comes the Lord. And Abram fell on his face and God talked with him. See, there's a little difference between you see a difference in the relationship. It's, you know, my dad's dead. But I remember when he was alive, when I was younger, I didn't talk with my dad, as most young kids don't talk with their dad. Their dad does all the talking. Their dad talks to them. Or it's mainly in the form of pronouncements, you know, take out the trash, clean up your room, you know, get better grades, this, that, you know, that's what it is. It's in the form of pronouncements. This is what's going to happen. But you know, as you get older and you become more mature and an adult and you grow up, you become more on the same level as your dad. And you begin to communicate differently. You talk to each other. And that's exactly what happens with God. If there's a time when you're a new Christian, a new believer, that God does all the talking. And it's in the form of pronouncements and commandments and proclamations. But when the believer begins to mature, the relationship changes. And then God talks to you. God talks with you more than just at you. And that's what you see happening here. So at some point or another, the relationship changes again. I mean, it said that Abraham was a friend of God. Of God's friend. That's a pretty close relationship, isn't it? Yeah. So God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee. And thou shalt be a father of many nations, not just one, but many nations. Neither shall thy name be any more called Abram,
But thy name shall be Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made thee. And I will make thee exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come out of thee. And I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and thy seed after thee, and their generations, for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee, and to thy seed after thee, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. So you see the expanded terms, not only a nation, but many nations. Not only that, but kings will come. Of course, we know that the King of Kings will also come out of the seed line. And there will be a covenant between thee and thy seed. Obviously, thee and thy seed is referring, as we find out from the Apostle Paul, to the singular seed, the Lord Jesus Christ. But in their generations, it's going to be an everlasting covenant, a covenant which is never going to be broken. And God will be the God of the believers, and it will be for an everlasting possession, the land of Canaan, and God will be the God of the believers always. But the covenant does come with stipulations on it. Starting there in verse 9, God says unto Abram, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. So, it is not a covenant which is a temporary covenant. It is an everlasting covenant. God says, this is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. And ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. He that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you. Every man child in your generations, he that is born in the house, or bought with money of any stranger which is not of thy seed, he that is born in thy house, and he that is bought with thy money, must needs be circumcised. And my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised man-child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant. Why is it you think that that's a good sign as a token of the covenant? Circumcision. Obviously, it's a physical sign. Well, the shedding of blood, yes, obviously. But it's a physical sign. It only affects the males. I mean, it's only done to the males, obviously. But when you think about that, why do you think that that's why pick that? Why not yank your toenails out? Or
Well, it's a token which would be known, of course, to the person who has it. It would not be. It's not a public display type of token. I mean, you know, it's not like a, you know, pierce your nose, or, you know, pierce your eyelids, or something of that nature. So whenever you walk around, everybody can see it type of token. It's not a public display type of token, but it would be a physical token that, of course, the person who has it would not forget it. It would be, you'd be reminded daily, at least once or twice a day, at the very least. And also, your spouse would know. So while it's a private token, those that you're personally connected with would know also. So that's the, you know, that would be the significance of it. There's no hiding it from those that are that you're closely in contact with, but it's not a public display. Much like your faith, if you're a Christian, can you hide the fact that you're a Christian? Well, I guess theoretically, you could. It's not on public display. It's something within you. Those who are very close to you would know. But you could disguise the fact. You wouldn't have to tell anybody else outside the house that you were Christian. And that's the same type of thing. So it's not a public display type of thing. It's a private. But this is a physical mark. It was never meant to be the end all be all of. It wasn't just the physical manifestation. That wasn't really what it was all about. If you look at Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 15 and 16, only the Lord had a delight in the fathers to love them, and He chose their seed after them, even you above all people, as it is this day. And Moses says, circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart, and be no more stiff-necked. It was never about physical circumcision. It was about knowing that they were a particular people of God. And that's exactly what the physical token was all about. Jeremiah 4:4 says, circumcise yourselves to the Lord, and take away the foreskins of your heart, ye men of Judah, inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my fury come forth like fire. So the circumcision is not about the removal of physical skin as so much as it is about the marking of a people. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 6, this verse prophesies about a new type of circumcision. The Lord thy God will circumcise thine heart and the heart of thy seed to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul, that thou mayest live. The circumcision of the heart is one that's accomplished by God. Paul talks about that in Colossians 2:10 and 11.
We've talked about that numerous times where Paul says, and you're complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power, in whom also ye are circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, in putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. So Moses in Deuteronomy 30 verse 6 talks about the new covenant circumcision that is done by God. So circumcision is really a mark. It's a token, but in the old covenant made between God and Abraham, it was a physical circumcision, and of course that passed on to that became a law. What God put in place for the new covenant was a circumcision of the heart, which God performs Himself, and that's what God always had in mind, that He didn't want to deal with a stiff-necked people, but one who loved God and loved their neighbors, not a bunch of mealy grumps all the time. So.
We still see the circumcision going on today.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. So, meanwhile, in Genesis 17:15, God reveals to Sarah that she will bear a son. Now, we don't know if Sarah had previously heard that she would be bearing a son, but God said unto Abraham, as for Sarah thy wife, or God that reveals that Sarah will bear a son. God said unto Abraham, as for Sarah thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be, and I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, kings of people shall be of her. And Abraham's response, of course, he being 99 years old and she being 90 years old, Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? So his response, oftentimes when we hear something that we don't believe, it's one of laughter. And really, that is his response, one of his disbelief. Again, we want to attribute all kinds of faith to Abraham, but the fact of the matter is his response was one of disbelief and surprise, both, I think, and that's exactly what he did. Because you see, He says that Abraham said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. Because frankly, Ishmael was a perfectly suitable heir as far as Abraham was concerned. And God had no intention of giving Ishmael the covenant blessings. God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him. And you remember that God had told Hagar that Ishmael would in fact be the father of people, and that of course he would be a wild man and such like. And so God repeats some promises for Ishmael concerning him. To Abraham, verse 20, as for Ishmael, I have heard thee, behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful, and I will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make of him a great nation. And we see the result of that. Of course, there's all kinds of Muslim people, and the people of the Middle East, for the most part, are descendants of Ishmael. But God says, my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this time in the next year. And he left off talking with him, and God went up from Abraham. So the covenant belongs to Isaac, and but Ishmael will in fact be blessed, and his descendants will be a great number of people. And obviously that's been the case. Now when you consternation between the Muslim people and the Jews is that Muslims believe that Ishmael was the recipient of the covenant, and that God has blessed them, and that they you know they have rights to the land of Canaan, and as the recipient of the covenant, they that land rightfully belongs to them, and the Jews should pack up and leave, and they should inherit all that land. So that's where the difference in the all the animosity between the Jews and the Arab nations come from. So it depends on what book you read, I guess, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, and rightfully so. They both claim Abraham, descendancy from Abraham, and they would be correct. And it's just, you know, they know they're descended from Ishmael, but they claim that God gave Ishmael the covenant promise, and therefore they should be inheriting that, you know, land of Canaan, and Jews have no right to that. So,
yeah, that's probably why they don't read this book, because it tells them that promise went to Isaac.
Well, they know what the Bible says.
Yeah.
Their claim is that the Bible has been corrupted, and that's why they have become experts at trying to prove all the corruption in the Bible and show you where all the mistakes are. And so, you need to, if you ever deal with a Muslim, you need to know how to handle them and all the things that they point out to you. But meanwhile, they believe that. So that's where all the problem comes from. I mean, they're they have historical understanding of Abraham and Ishmael. They don't deny either of them, you know, and they are right in their claim at that, as far as that goes. But they're just incorrect as far as who receives the covenant blessing. And you know, at some point or another, God's going to pick. You know, He's already picked a side, and He's just going to, you know, prove it's going to be up to God as to who inherits what. So it's not going to be up to man anyway. So, in chapter 18, we're not going to get through the entire chapter, but this is a very interesting chapter. We talked about Abraham conversing with God, and this is really a very interesting chapter about the relationship between Abraham and God. Because it shows the... It shows the closeness, I guess, if you want to put it that way, and the sway that Abraham had with God. And it's very interesting to see, because Abraham, it's almost like a game show, I suppose, because Abraham dickers with God in this chapter. But three men are seen by Abraham on the plain of Mamre, where Abraham is, where his tent is set up, and Abraham greets them and sets up a feast for them, and is very hospitable. So in Genesis 18, the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. So Abraham's sitting in the door of the tent, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And he saw them and ran to meet them from the tent door, and bowed himself toward the ground and said, "My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on, for therefore are ye come to your servant." And they said, "Do so." And now, as thou hast said, Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah, and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth." And Abraham ran unto the herd, and fetched a calf, and tender and good, and gave it unto a young man. He hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk, and the calf which he had dressed, and set it before them. And he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. So, you know, you think about this big production. He went and grabbed a calf and gave it to the man. And the young man slaughtered it and nearly cooked it and got butter. And, you know, Sarah's in the tent whipping up a meal of, you know, biscuits and gravy and, you know, the whole nine yards. I mean, you know, this is preparing this big feast. And now the feast is served, and, you know, they're sitting out there eating, you know, the calf and, I mean, it's like Thanksgiving dinner that they put together here real fast. So they get done eating, and then they inquire about Sarah. And they said unto Abraham, "Where is Sarah thy wife?" And he said, "Behold, in the tent." And he said, "I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son." And Sarah was probably in a tent. Now, you need to understand that at that time women were probably to be hidden away and not seen. You know, she's probably in the tent, and the men are out there to eat and do all the thing, and, you know, she's inside to cook the meal and not to come out and help or you know, sit around, and she's just in there by herself. And that's the custom. But she probably had her ear to the tent wall to hear what's going on. She's anything like my wife. So one of the men said, and he said, "I will certainly return to thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son." And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. Now, it's hard to say. Now, I know that Abraham called the one Lord, but, you know, you just have three men, and it's really difficult to understand whether Abraham fully comprehended who the three men were before this. But you pretty much got to figure that by this time Abraham would know that the one is God, because of what they're talking about at this point. But Sarah, she has a response like Abraham, which means that either she didn't hear what went on when God talked with Abraham the first time and said that you're going to have a son, and you know, when Abraham laughed and said, you know, "I'm going to be 100 years old and Sarah's going to be 90 years old, and I don't think if that's right." Either Sarah didn't hear any of that, or else she got it from Abraham and just didn't believe it. But she hears at this time, and she has a very similar response to Abraham's. Because in verse 11 it says, "Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age." So at 100 years old, Abraham, and 90 years old for Sarah, even though Abraham lived to 175 years old before he died, the description, they were old and well stricken in age. They were aged. They didn't look like they were 40 years old anymore. And they weren't just running and jumping around. You could tell that they were old at this point. And the last part of the verse, "And it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women." In other words, her physical ability to have, first of all, to have babies had gone by the wayside. So her response was in verse 12, "Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord also being old?" And I think we can all understand what she's saying there. You know, when you're 18 years old, everybody, you know, all the young ladies look good, but you know, when you're pushing 80, you're ready to just go to bed, go to sleep. "And the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh?" What are you laughing for, Sarah? "Saying, shall I of a surety bear a child which am old?" And God responds saying, "Nothing is impossible with God." Verse 14, "Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son." So in other words, it's going to be a miracle. So just wait, and you're going to have a son. And so realizing basically who was doing the talking there, Sarah lied because she feared. Then Sarah denied, saying, "I laughed not, for she was afraid." And he said, "Nay, but thou did laugh." So we see that Sarah has promised a son, Abraham has promised a son, and they both had a little faith crisis when they heard the news, but they will in fact receive a son.